All right, let's make a little magic here, Kevin. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. And please, by all means, as we have now surpassed the 1 year, 52 episode milestone, I do have a landing page at WGNplus.com. It's in the entertainment section. You will see it under the entertainment prompt. You go into there and it says Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Go on there and there are 53 binge-worthy episodes for the past year. So if this episode tickles your fancy, or you are left wanting more after this hour, there are 53 other gems just sparkling and waiting for you to click on. So please go to the Elton Jim Captain Podtastic landing page for what we've done in the past. And thank you for tuning in or clicking on today for episode 54. Later in the show, we will talk to Emily Arminetti in the Pop Culture Club, as I always like to talk to Emily about what's going on in the pop culture world. And this week, we've got a couple of things. We've got a huge one of the big movies of the summer already coming out, as summer has just dawned. And we've already got one of the major, most anticipated movies coming to theaters. Wonder Woman. According to the cover of Entertainment Weekly, it's been a 76-year saga of the world's most famous heroine finally making it to the big screen. So we're going to talk about Wonder Woman and its chances of being the big hit of the summer. There are a lot of people betting on this and hoping for this, as we are certainly in the midst of the female empowerment era. And so a lot of movies today are starring and fronted and directed and written by women. And in the superhero world, it has been male-dominated ever since, you know, the first Superman movie in the 70s, and then the great Batman movie by Tim Burton, which really was the kickoff for this whole superhero genre of the last 15 or 20 years. And through all those movies, there have been 7 Spider-Mans and 8 Batman movies and 5 Iron Mans, and all, every superhero movie ends in man. And I guess so does Wonder Woman. But this is the first time we got the woe in front of it. So we're going to see if Wonder Woman can become one of the big hits of the summer. And the reason I question it or wonder about it, that's me, Mr. Devil's Advocate, is that, last summer, a lot of expectation for the all-female Ghostbusters, which sadly, after 30-some years of trying to bring a sequel, if you will, or a new Ghostbusters movie to theaters, it really did not do as what they expected. It made a good chunk of money, but it was expected to make $500 million or some crazy amount, and it really didn't, and it sort of came and went very quickly. So we'll talk about that in the Pop Culture Club. But I want to start the podcast off today as we approach the official beginning of summer. I think summer officially starts in mid to late June. It's usually like the 20th of the month. So I think like June 20th might be the official time. This podcast will be posted on Memorial Day. So if you're listening when it's posted, happy Memorial Day. So we're not exactly at summer yet, but we will be soon. Media, it's difficult for me to say this word. I don't know why. Thank God I never became a weatherman, because I would have had to have said this word, and it would have been difficult for me to have a job. Although, It's still difficult for me to have a job. Meteor, I know you're busy in there, Kevin, but...
Meteorological.
Yeah, what is it?
Meteorological. Am I saying
I don't know.
Meteorological.
Remember we had this discussion a few podcasts ago.
It's a tough one.
Meteorological.
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 I think you got it.
Meteor. So it always feels like there's an extra syllable in there,
like
but
throwing something in there. But
meteor. So like basically it's meteor.
Yes.
Illogical. So the like a meteor in the air.
Yeah.
And then illogical.
Yeah.
So in other words, seeing a meteor would be illogical.
Yes, I think that's correct.
So that's how I can keep this straight, and I can say it right now. Watch. Meteorological.
You've just hacked it. You figured it out.
I play these games. I said many podcasts ago, when people give me phone numbers, I play a mental game. I pick apart the numbers by famous sports figures, what their numbers were, or maybe they have to be famous, but people that I would remember. So in other words, if it was your phone number was 451-4539, I would say number 4 was Bobby Orr, 51 was Dick Butkus, 45 was Gary Fensick, and 39 was Larry Zonka from the Dolphins. And that's how I remember it. I would say Bobby Orr, Butkus, Fensick, Zonka. Boom. I got the number. I don't even have to say the number. While I'm dialing, I just think of those people. And so with this now, I have always stumbled on that word. But now, once again, a mental game. Seeing a meteor is illogical. Meteorological. It's so simple to say it now that I want to say it all the time.
You're going to be finding ways to.
This is going to be the meteorological show. Because I can't stop saying that word now. My new favorite word. The password is meteorological. Look, I can't even. I'm trying to screw it up. I can't. Because of, I'm so excited I found a way to say meteorological. Look,
today was a success, no matter what.
Yeah, right now, you know what? We've only been on for like 8 minutes. I could leave. This could be an eight. I think I can't top, the next, 52 minutes. I assure you will be good. But in my mind, the first eight were spooked. I can't say stupendous now. Stupendous.
I was like, what is
now? How can I say? Okay, now wait. Now I said putend. I don't even know what the heck that word was. I said. So now, how can I? What mental game can I play to say stupendous? No, I could say stupendous all day, but meteorological. I can't not say that word correctly now. It's like my name. I can't wait. Every so often, I fill in for Dean Richards on WGN and. And one of the regulars he has on the show is a weather guy from WGN television, Mike Hammernick. And I never, when I'm interviewing him on the air, I always shy away from saying meteorological because I know that I'm going to screw it up. And so sometimes the word I'm supposed to say it and I sort of skirt around and I use other words for it because I'm always in my mind when I realize I have to say meteorological, then I get scared. And now, I'm pounding my chest, meteorological.
It's like it's nothing.
It's nothing. Why was that word, a meteor is illogical? Thank you very much. So anyway. The funny thing is, the ability for me to say meteorological has nothing to do with the topic that I'm talking about. The topic that I was originally talking about really had nothing to do with weather at all. But as I was saying, take two. So I believe that that summer may begin on June 20th. If this sounds familiar, I'm just doing it again. I believe that it's the solstice, the summer solstice. So it's like June 20th or something like that. But according to meteorological, in my years talking to Tom Skilling, I believe it's like June 1st is meteorological. summer, like June 1st. And then it's like, I think it's like December 1st. They don't go by the solstice kind of thing. They go by the beginning of the month. So in theory, even though officially on your calendar it says June 20th, meteorological summer is June 1st. God, I can't. The goal here is now when this podcast is done, whoever can first Facebook me and tell me how many times I said meteorological summer, or just meteorological, how many times I said that during the hour, and maybe I'll see if I've got some prize, because I know I've got something to send you, because it plays into right exactly what I'm talking about. So we are officially close to summer meteorologically. Wow, look at that. I even put the L-Y.
L-Y, yeah. Getting fancy now.
Yeah. See, now I'm getting cocky. And now, yeah, I'm going to go right off the cliff because now I'm getting too cocky. But still, so we're technically still kind of in a spring kind of time. And so I don't know about you, but, you know, after the long hibernation of winter, it's always nice to get out of the hibernation. And part of the rebirth of spring is also the rebirth of your surroundings, because you've been hibernating for 4, 5, or 6 months, especially here in the Chicago area. And so, you know, the house gets a little dusty. There's some of those nooks and crannies in the corners. Even if you vacuum all the time and you dust all the time, you'll find, you know, some of those dust bunnies. In my house, they're not bunnies. They're bears. They're dust bears. They're huge. People think they're actually artwork. They're so big. And the worst is when, I don't know about you, but like when Easter was on, meteorological Easter, at a certain point, thankfully, everybody was gone. We hosted Easter this year. And so in our dining room, I mean, we were cleaning the house up. It took me 8 hours. I mean, I was going crazy because it had been a while since I said, let's just do a real scrubbing of the house. And at a certain time, thankfully, everybody left. But you know the way the sun starts to change its angles in the spring after what it was like in the winter. And the sun came in from the kitchen window and shone into the dining room and right under the table. Oh, my gosh. How did I miss that spot with my Swiffer? Oh, my gosh. There was so much dust. I was like, thank God everybody left. So I'm a big spring cleaning advocate. There is something internally about that. It really gets me going, and I want to start cleaning. And if you've listened to me on the radio with any kind of regularity, you'll know that my mom was there's two ways you look at what my mom was in terms of stuff. She was either a rabid sentimentalist or a hoarder. I don't know which one. They might be the same thing, or there might be a very gray line in between both. But my mom saved almost everything. Our attic in our home was completely filled with stuff. We couldn't use the attic. It was literally just a dumping ground. When she passed away, I went up there to clean it out. And in my lifetime, I had never seen what the floor looked like in our attic, because you were just stepping on stuff, boxes. I mean, it was unbelievable. I wound up throwing out 400, and I'm not exaggerating, I wish I was, 400 giant, big black plastic bags of stuff. She had boxes. She just had boxes because they were good boxes, you know? She had bags because these are nice bags. And she had dresses from the 1940s and shoes from the 1950s. She kept everything. I remember one time, several years before she passed, I went over there one time, and I could sort of tell, like, you know, they were starting to get a little older and their health was getting a little failing. And I knew that this was going to fall to me. I'm an only child. I'm going to have to clean this whole house out. And so I said to her, I know you don't want to touch any of your things, but there's some stuff of mine still here that we could probably start to throw out. And we were down in the basement where my room was, and there was a lot of my stuff that I didn't bring with me when I got married that was just still sitting at the house. And I said, so we're going through this stuff, and I started to throw it out. And she looked at me like, oh, you mean you're going to throw out your these little letters that you used to spell with? And I'm like, Mom, they worked. I know how to spell. And I'm not going to use them again. Oh, my gosh, you have no sentimentality. Did I say that word right? Sentimentality. See, no, I can say meteorologically, but I can't say sentiment. You're not sentimental at all. And I'm like, no, it's not that I'm not sentimental. But there has to come a line when you throw things out. And so I have inherited some of that. But at the same time, the experience of having to go through their house after they passed and literally just clean it up and get most of the junk out. Here's the other side of the coin. For the 400 bags that I've thrown out of stuff, I still have in my house, and I am pledging that by September 1st, they've been in my basement now for 10 years, going on 11. And I pledge by September 1st, I have 35 bins of stuff of hers that I believe may be of some value. And so I haven't, and so I've been storing them, and I'm, as I said, I'm in this declutter mode. I just want to declutter. I myself, like my mom, have been a collector for most of my life. But I also can throw stuff out. But I have collected quite a bit. And in my situation, and with my wife, we have no children. And we're both only children, so we have no siblings. So this is going to fall on us to actually declutter before, there's not going to be anybody in our lives who's like I was when we pass away. Who's going to do this? Who's going to throw this stuff out or go through it? There isn't anyone. And so some people have accused me, this is so morbid. Are you getting ready to die? No, I'm not getting ready to die. But I saw what I saw firsthand what I had to do when my parents passed away with their stuff. And I know there is no one that's going to be doing it for me. And so I think it's actually irresponsible if I didn't start to do this now. And hopefully, I'll be around for another 35 years or so, and that would be great. But, I think it would be irresponsible to just let this be someone else's job because I collected it all. So let me go through it. And I'm not throwing everything out. There is some stuff that certainly has some sentimental value, but there's a lot of stuff that you keep and you think, well, someday I'll use it. Well, you know what? After 30 years, if you haven't looked at it or you haven't used it, someday has passed. But here's the question. And I've been going through this over the last couple of weeks. I've been going down there and, like I said, we're going through her stuff now, and I'm going to see if it's of value, if I could potentially sell it somewhere, or maybe we'll donate it. I don't know, but I am definitely dedicated to, by September 1st, those 35 bins are going to be out of the house one way or the other. But there is a question, and I do think of my mom when I'm going through this. Are you throwing away garbage, or are you throwing away memories? And, we don't want to throw away our memories, But at the end of the day, let's be honest, so many of our memories, they live in our minds. They don't live in those bins. And yes, while there are times when I open up the bin and I'm looking for something and I see this thing and I go, oh, there's my Dr. Doolittle doll that I still have from, you know, 1967 or 68. And yeah, it does bring a nice little warm fuzzy. No, I mean, it does bring a nice memory of, oh gosh, I remember playing with that. But at the same time, what am I doing with it? And does it have some value? I don't know. I will say that, like, my toys that I do have, I haven't been able to throw a lot of those away yet. I'm still holding on to those because they are dear memories. But there's a lot of stuff that's just, you know, paper stuff or other things that you go, you know what? I don't need this anymore. In fact, just today, before I came here today, I went down in the basement and I wound up 5 bags of garbage, 5 bags. And I have done this several times over the last 10 or 15 years, done this kind of spring cleaning thing to weed out the garbage. So this is not the first time. This is like the third or fourth time. And I'm still, you know, finding the criteria. I can only, you know, I mean, so I had a lot more stuff now. I still have a ton of stuff in these bins in the basement. And yet, I had more. In fact, what's really interesting, when I throw away the stuff, I've been throwing away this stuff in the last couple of weeks and over the last several years. And so now I have empty bins. And I think I have say 27 or 28 of my own bins with my wife as well. And then we've got like 20 Christmas bins. And then I've got 20 Elton John memorabilia bins. And then I've got about 40 bins of all my CDs, which I wonder, I have over 3,000 CDs. That's why I've got 24,000 songs on my iPod. I put almost all of those CDs into my iPod Classic. And so I have to find out, are those CDs worth anything? Are they worth a buck? I don't even know anymore if I went to trade them in. But so I've still got quite a job to do here, but I am dedicated to doing it. And like I said, I'm not going to throw everything out yet. I'm not at that point yet. But I remember 3 or 4 years ago, I actually made this declaration that I was in the, after 50 years of collecting things, I thought it was best now that I should collect memories instead of things. And so I have not been buying a lot of stuff anymore, even though there's some really cool things. I'm like, you know what? I've got everything I need. And if I'm going to spend some money, I'd like to spend it on experiences. I'd like to spend it on memories. My wife and I have always traveled from the beginning when we first got married. And so I'm like, you know what? If we're going to spend money, or I'm going to spend money, I'd rather spend money on experiences, on memories. So let's go, let's save that money that we would have spent and let's go somewhere cool that we never went to before, or let's go to a place that we really loved and let's go there again, or let's go to a play, or let's go to a, or whatever. But let's, I would rather collect memories than collect things, because memories stay with you and the things get packed away. And so while some people accuse me of, oh, this is so depressing, I said, well, no, you're 30. You should be out collecting. You should be gathering your stuff. I understand that. I have no problem with people in their 30s going out and buying stuff. And hey, you know, you buy a car or you buy a house and you got to get furniture and you got to get little knickknacks. Hey, I'm all for it. Believe me, look in my bins. I'm all for that. But then when you know, 20 years go by and you realize that a lot of that stuff that you thought you couldn't live without, you've been living without it for the last 15 years because they've been in a bin. And so that's the kind of criteria that you have to go through. But it's not easy. I'll tell you, this has not been easy. But one thing, if anybody has ever cleaned out either your own stuff, or you've had to clean out, as I said, a parent or a friend or a loved one that you may have had to go through some stuff if they've passed away or something like that, or even if it's your own stuff, there is something, at least I have found, there is something so cathartic. Once you're in that mood, you have to be in the mood. I don't know where the endorphins come from. You know, for me, throwing stuff out, when I'm in that zone, when I'm in declutter zone, and I just want to get rid of stuff, I have never run a marathon, but they always talk about the endorphins. That hit when you're running all that way and you're, especially when you're getting close, the endorphins hit it and there's this natural high. I don't know about you, but if you ever have gone on these major kind of, you know, spring cleaning binges, there's like a cathartic high that you get. Today, I threw 5 bags out and I saw those 5 bags laying there. And oh my God, I felt like I was 17 again. I was just like, awesome. It is cathartic. There is something about that. But as I said, you going through it, you do have to, and it's so personal. Because some of this stuff, here's the thing, and this is my criteria as well. You know, my mom saved all this stuff, right? And I could never have thrown this away while she was alive, because she would have always found an excuse or a reason to say, oh, no, you can't throw that out because blah, blah, blah. When I saw it, it was garbage. When she saw it, it was a memory. And that's the hard part. As I said before, I've got no one really who's going to come in and take care of this stuff. So even the stuff that I keep, ultimately, someone will still look at it and go, throw it out. And I'll say, oh my God, remember that. How could you, you know, I'll be floating in the cosmos and saying, how could you just discard that so easily? You know why? Because that little thing doesn't have the sentimental memory attached to it for them that it does for me. So the thing is that ultimately someone's going to go through this and just throw it out. There's this company, and I'm going to give them a plug, not that I, you know, it's just, but it's this company called 1-800-JUNK. And they will come into your house and they will take anything you have and they will throw it out. And I had to do that with a lot of my parents' furniture. It was getting old and it was falling apart. And it was amazing. In 45 minutes, these guys cleaned the house out. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it was tough to watch the kitchen table where me and my mom and my dad sat around and had our meals at, or the dining room, or this old couch and things like that. Yeah, it was difficult to see that stuff leave. But I'll tell you, when that truck drove away and I walked through the house and it was empty and it was cleaned out like it needed to be, oh, it really felt good. Yeah, there was some sentimentality of seeing that stuff go out, but there comes a point where you have to detach yourself, you know, because, you know, if is it really a memory if it's in a bin? I don't think so. You know, so, you know, what is junk to one person is an amazing memory to another. But as I said, in my situation, if I don't get rid of this stuff, then it's going to be thrown out anyway. And if I don't see it for 30 years, then was it really that important of a memory? I don't know. But so that's my kind of take on this. But I was just wondering if folks out there, if you're in the same situation, how do you feel about throwing stuff out or keeping things? You know, as I said, I mean, my house is filled with a lot of knickknacks. I mean, it's not as if I'm, you know, the walls are bare and nothing. Believe me, I've got enough stuff to keep me happy. And but here's the funny thing, as I've been going through this stuff, as important as it is, I haven't said, oh, you know what, I need, oh, this is something I need to bring upstairs to maybe, you know, display again. Which is another kind of criteria. you know, if I don't have that need to say, well, oh, wow, this is great. How did I put this in a bin? Then I put it in a bin because I got some new stuff and I needed to put some stuff away. And if that stuff has lost its luster, then, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. If it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster. Now there's, you know what? I thought the first 8 minutes of the show were good when I was able to say meteorological without stumbling. Then I figured out how to do it, saying seeing a meteor is illogical and putting the words together. But now I just found a new way to, as I continue to sort of do my spring cleaning. If it's lost its lust, if it has, what did I say? If it's lost its luster, it can't pass muster. And that means it goes. Now that's what I'm going to use. Because I'm going to look at this and say, okay, like, here's a perfect example. Now, I have a bin filled, and I'm not trying to brag here, I'm just saying, I have 1.5 bins filled with my sports trophies. Now, these are literally 40-some years old. Even the most recent sports one would be 35. No, let's see. I played hockey. We did win a championship back in a league in my late 20s. But I'm saying for the most part, these are all my baseball and basketball and hockey trophies from when I was, you know, from an 8-year-old kid to 18. And you know what? And one of those, I mean, I was on a city champion baseball little league team. We actually played in Wrigley Field in 1975. And so that was, you know, I still have that trophy. But once again, it's in this bin. Now, what am I doing with this in this bin? But you know what? I opened up the trophy bin, and I'm still not ready to throw away the trophies. And I don't know why, because it brings me back to a fun time. I can look at every one of those trophies and remember the season and remember highlights of the season. So once again, I don't think I'm ready. But you know what? I mean, that should be a no-brainer. That bit and a half of those trophies, that should be like the first one out. Who cares? Who cares about these trophies? I don't have any kids to show them to. My wife doesn't care that I was MVP of whatever league or we came in first place. Who cares? But I can't. I'm not ready to let those go. And that's so now I have to now. But now tomorrow when I go in the basement, I'm going to open up the trophy bin again, and I'm going to ask myself if it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster. And maybe those trophies are leaving. I don't know. So that's all I can tell you is I'm going through spring training. I'm going through spring cleaning right now. I am decluttering. I'm in an era. I am in a mindset of decluttering. Declutter. I am in a mindset of collecting memories and not things. When Christmas comes, I tell people I don't need anything. Don't get me anything. I don't want anything. And I've really been surprised. I mean, for somebody, like, for instance, you know, we were talking about Twin Peaks. You know, the old Jim Toronto, there's a ton of Twin Peaks, merchandise out there now. The show's coming back. Oh, my God. You know how much money I would have been spending on Twin Peaks crap? Haven't bought anything. So I'm kind of proud of myself. So at least I'm walking the walk. I'm talking the talk, but I'm walking the walk. So I don't know about you. But if you are spring cleaning, think of that. If it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster, and out it goes. And believe me, if you throw enough stuff out, you will get that that little endorphin high that I'm talking about. And it's kind of cathartic. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, you're losing a part of yourself. You're saying goodbye to a part of yourself. But it's also freeing you up to experience more. So as I said, I spent the first half of my life, I would probably be 100, the first 50 years, I should say, collecting stuff. And now I'm collecting memories. Do we have that little music there? And welcome back to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, episode 54, on the phone from Austin, Texas. That's right. You're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. Emily Amernetti, how you doing, Emily?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
How you feeling this week? You were a little down in the weather last week, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah, I mean,
yes,
you're...
I'm feeling much better.
Already. You all right now, just after saying hello, you are more energetic than you were for like 40 minutes.
That's because I'm about to invite you to Austin to come clean out a bunch of my stuff.
Oh, believe me. Oh, I mean, if I had to go through your stuff, you should. I mean, when I was cleaning out my parents' house, I was having so much fun. I did it naked. I mean, it was like a sexual experience.
Okay, that's not allowed in my house.
No, I mean, it was so cathartic because, as I said, I went up to this attic, which was a dumping ground of my mom's, 80 years, practically.
Right.
And as I said, I never saw what the floor looked like in that attic in my lifetime. And I'm not exaggerating, when I actually got down to the floor, now the floor was no great shakes, but I was like, right. Wow, I had never seen what this floor looked like in my entire life, because you were literally climbing over mountains of stuff. But
right.
I had a whole system. I don't know how early you were able to hear. I threw out 400 bags of stuff from my mom's house.
Come on.
No, and I have 35 bins of things of hers that still might have some value. That's how much stuff she had.
Wow.
But what I did, every Monday, the garbage came, like on Monday morning. So Sunday night, I would go to their house, and I would say, I'm only going to be here for whatever I can get done in an hour and a half. I did this very systematic. I said, I'm just going to go up every, I'm going to, I'm not going to, this is not going to be an all encompassing 40, hour thing on one day. I'm going to go there. And every time I go there, I'm going to work for an hour and a half of throwing stuff out. And I would accumulate about 20 bags, right? So when I first did this, I had 40 bags. What I did was I took 20 bags and I took them from the attic and I put them down in the den area, which was by the back door. And so then there was 20 upstairs still to go. There were 20 now ready for delivery at the back door. I would go there Sunday night. I would go and I would take the 20 bags and put them in the alley and stack them up, because I didn't want all these bags out there for a week, So I'd go there, and so I would constantly have this flow of upstairs, downstairs, out. Upstairs, downstairs, out. Upstairs, downstairs, out. Upstairs, downstairs,
wow.
Until I got rid of 400 bags of stuff. And these were the big industrial size, not just the small little garbage bags that you put in your waste paper basket.
Right, not the little Glad bags.
Yeah, no. These were those big, giant, like 90-gallon things that, work.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, she had boxes. It's just like empty box. It was a huge amount of work. And that's what I was saying.
But see, now you're giving me an idea, which is maybe I don't clean out my closets and then I just let my kids do it when I die.
Well, that's my problem. The reason why I'm on this cathartic cleanup is I don't have those kids.
Right.
Who's going to clean my house? Who's going to be the me? There is no me. I'm me. So
right.
I have to do it earlier because there's no me around. And I would think it actually would be irresponsible to just leave this stuff. And then, or what's going to happen is someone's just going to come in and they're just going to just throw everything out. So it's going to get thrown out. It's gonna get,
I mean, I don't even know who would do that. I don't know.
That's what I mean. So I have to begin to do this on my own. And as I said, there's a little criteria. And as I said, there's a question of, are you throwing away garbage? Are you throwing away memories? But ultimately, I think those memories are in your mind.
Right. And then also, when you come to my house to clean out my closet, you don't have that emotional attachment to my junk.
That's the beauty of it. That's what I said. You know, the thing is, if I say, you know, my stuff is hanging around and my wife is gone and I'm, you know, someone's going to walk in and go, this is all crap.
Right.
You know, it will take someone 5 minutes to throw away my stuff.
Because they're going to be like, what kind of loser?
Exactly. You hit it right on the head. You know, all of our stuff, all of our junk only means stuff to me or to us.
Right.
But the objective person who comes in, they go, oh, my God, this is a 50-year-old Dr. Doolittle doll. Who needs this? And I go, oh, that's my Dr. Doolittle doll when I was a little kid. Where's his hat? You know, I mean, like I said, I still can't throw my Dr. Doolittle doll out. But that's my point. Someone else come by and go, this is dumb. Who needs it? So I have to. So that's where my criteria is now. I have to say, okay, wow, this is cool. I remember this, but I will always remember it. And I don't know if I need it sitting in a bin, because if it's sitting in a bin, it's not a memory anymore, right?
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, yeah. But no, it is. You're right. The memories are still there. You don't need the things attached to the memories. But there is like a method that's really popular. This woman wrote a book about it, and I think it was like a bestseller.
Yeah, I've heard about this. I've heard about that book.
You know this? You're supposed to look at each item and ask yourself, does this bring you joy? And if the answer is no, you thank it for its service.
And then you throw it out.
And you put it in the bin.
Yeah. No, that's and what I've always thought about, similar to that, is, you know, when push comes to shove, talk about cathartic, is just, you know, start a bonfire. And just be really, and bring the bins out, and instead of saying and thanking it, and putting it in the bin to throw it out, thank it and let it burn, and just watch the ashes.
Okay. That might be illegal, counties.
But I don't know if you've, and like I said, I don't. I certainly don't begrudge people who are younger. I have been a collector. I was a gatherer, but as I said, now I'm a declutterer. Yeah. And there comes a point when you have to say enough is enough. Because I saw firsthand, my mom never had that gene. She never had that shutoff valve. And
hoarding gene.
Yeah. Well, I said she's either a rabid sentimentalist or a hoarder.
Right.
You know, there's a thin line there. But
exactly.
Yeah. But yeah. So believe me, for room and board, I will definitely throw your junk out.
Oh, I look forward to your visit. This is great. Because you are obviously getting a great sense of accomplishment and lots of, like, energy from doing this. Versus, like, when I even think about having to clean out certain closets, I just, like, need to lay down and take a nap.
Oh, yeah. No, like you said.
I'm tired just thinking about it.
That's exactly what I said. I've never run a marathon, but there's I threw 5 bags out today. There are endorphins hitting me when I threw the 5 bags out. I felt 17 again.
Okay, well, I have a spare room. You are welcome to it.
Well, let me get through my stuff first, and then I will take that long and elusive trip to Austin that I've been threatening. And I will come with hefty bags in hand.
Right.
So very quickly here, I got a couple of things I want to chat to you about today. The first thing is, I got my Entertainment Weekly magazine, and on the cover, it says, the untold 76-year saga of how the world's most famous heroine finally made it to the big screen, Wonder Woman. And so this movie...
Oh, yeah.
So now this Wonder Woman movie, I've seen the trailers and the commercials on television. It's opening this week. And when this podcast will be posted. So this certainly is going to be the movie of the weekend. I think it comes out on June 2nd. And I'm just wondering. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Please do not think that I am...
As usual.
Yes,
as usual.
That is my role. I am just an observer on this. I have no horse in the race. But I'm just thinking, you know, there are, just like the Ghostbusters movie of last summer with the all-female cast, there seems to be more, this is more than just a movie. This is kind of like a cultural and almost a political statement about a woman in power leading a movie, and it's the main actor and the main protagonist here. And can a woman protagonist movie make the $200 million? And can Wonder Woman in her own movie, not just in other, you know, as a part of a movie, can a Wonder Woman movie stand up with all the other man, M-A-N, superhero movies like Batman, Superman, Iron Man?
I get the point.
Yeah. So now... I've seen, I mean, what do you think? I mean, you know, let's be honest. 2016 was certainly a year where there was a lot of promise for women. Ghostbusters and Hillary Clinton. Neither of them were, neither of them were hits.
Well,
so where are we in 2017 with Wonder Woman?
Let's break this down. I mean, because there are a couple questions there. I mean, you're asking me if, like, a female-led film can be successful. And be
a superhero. I mean, certainly, there have been female.
So there is a distinction there. I mean, because, you know, and I don't even think this has to do with whether there's a female or a male in the lead. So you have, like, certainly, you know, certainly films with female protagonists have been very successful. I mean, there are lots of action films that have been, you know, like Angelina Jolie did all those Tomb Raider films and those did really well. And the Resident Evil, which didn't even really have like the star of those films. She's not even really an A-list celebrity. You know, she's not Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
Those did very well. You've got the Charlie's Angels with Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz. And so I think that action films with female leads historically have done well. Now, the superhero genre, which I think I kind of consider like a subgenre of action films, that you know, I think remains to be seen. But having said that, I think that there are plenty of superhero films starring men that have bombed as well. So the question I think is more, do superhero films do well? I think they're very hit or miss. You know, like Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds, that bombed. Batman with Ben Affleck, which made like $860 million, but was still considered a flop.
Right.
Because it didn't even, because it was expected to earn $1 billion at least, you know.
Yeah.
Batman and Robin, which was, you know, years ago, but that, you know,
that almost killed the entire franchise.
He has apologized to the franchise for almost.
Yeah, George almost Clooney, definitely. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's really, you know, I will it do well? I don't know. But I don't necessarily think it's because there's a female lead. And I think that, you know, if you're comparing it to a film like Ghostbusters, I think it doesn't really work with the comparison, because first of all, Ghostbusters was like a remake versus this is kind of an original script. As you mentioned, or I guess Entertainment Weekly mentioned, you know, the story of Wonder Woman is like 70 some years old. And Wonder Woman is probably the world's most recognizable female superhero, you know? So I don't know. I think if it doesn't succeed, I don't think it's going to be because it's a female protagonist.
Well, the only thing,
and I think it also wonders what the con, I mean, okay, so it's coming out Memorial Day weekend. I think that's going to be good for it. But I think it depends also on what else is going. Like, I don't even know what's in the theaters right now, but it kind of depends on what the competition
is. Well, the only thing that I bring this up is because if you recall when the female Ghostbusters movie was being made and when it was about to be released, there was a lot of internet chatter and there was actually a lot of misogyny of people saying, well, how dare you cast an all-female Ghostbuster movie? And so then that started to pick up some steam to the point then where then there was a very pro-feminist kind of movement going on that people were saying, hey, look, even if this movie is terrible, women go out there and support it because we have to tell Hollywood that female protagonists, you know, especially in these big tent kind of movies, these big franchise movies, you know, they can draw big box office just like anyone else can. And it actually was.
Right.
And so that's my thing, is that we are certainly in an era now, and that's fine. I have no problem with it. But clearly you can see, I mean, one of the movies they're making now is a remake of Ocean's 11 called Ocean's 8.
Oh, yes.
Which will be all women.
Now that is something that you can definitely draw the direct comparison to the Ghostbusters reboot, because they're basically doing the same thing.
They're
taking a movie that originally was an all-male cast, and they're remaking it, and it's an all-female cast.
I understand your thing. My only thing is that I would say the only thing that transcends that, I mean, I understand it's a little apples and oranges, but the fact is that regardless, if it took 76 years, or if it took 40 years of filmmaking, whatever it took, to finally get a Wonder Woman movie, regardless of the logic, the perception is going to be, if this movie fails, that, yeah, you know, we can have Wonder Woman as part of the Justice League, but she can't be, you know, the main one. And the question is going to be, are 15-year-old and 12-year-old boys going to see this movie? And are 14 and 15-year-old girls going to go see it? You know, that's going to be the question. I mean, I am not, you know, this movie will not appeal to me. I've seen I've seen the commercials. It looks like a video game. You know, so it's all explosions.
But that's the kind of stuff that does well.
Oh, certainly. That's what I mean.
You know, Resident Evil and what was the other? Oh, Tomb Raider.
Yeah, no, I'm, like I said.
They're actually based on video games, which is crazy when you think about it.
I'm not one to judge this as to who it's going to be a hit or not, because this movie is not made for me, and the look of it and everything else is not there to appeal to me. But when I see this, I'm just wondering, there's a lot of hype for this, whether it's unfair or not, whether comparison isn't true. And I would, you know, Hollywood can be very fickle, and Hollywood chases the money. And while there's a lot of these female movies now getting greenlighted, because there's certainly a media, at least, demand to say, hey, let's even the playing field here. And there's nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, if those box office numbers, you know, Hollywood will be as progressive as the box office allows it to be.
Right, exactly. Well, and it's interesting, like you mentioned kind of with Ghostbusters, people were sort of like, hey, whether it's good or not, you know, the people who supported it were like, go out and see it. And, you know, commercially, it was a total flop. But I was trying to figure out, like, how it was received critically. And do you ever go, I don't know if you know Rotten Tomatoes, do you ever go on that website?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Hey, I'm hip so, with the internet superhighway online movie sites.
You know what? You are just gunning it down the information superhighway right
now. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. In fact, I have a brick right on the pedal. I'm like the Autobahn. There's not even a speed limit when I'm on there.
You are. Exactly. So the Ghostbusters reboot actually got a 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not a bad score.
No, it's not a bad score.
No,
but
not for Rotten Tomatoes.
No, but here's the thing about the Ghostbusters movie. First of all, any Ghostbuster movie, not just a female cast movie, but any Ghostbuster movie, they had been trying to make any Ghostbuster movie for 30 years.
Yeah.
And they've gone through all these, you know, scripts and rumors and everything. And finally, because of the groundswell here of the rise of women, and basically, let's be honest, if it wasn't for Bridesmaids, I don't think any of this would even be going on. I mean, Bridesmaids was a touchstone movie in terms of a woman-based movie that had a male mentality to it. that drew males as well as females. And after that movie made so much money and made so many stars like Melissa McCarthy and others, that's when all of a sudden Hollywood said, okay, wait a minute. Maybe it's time that we reassess. My only question is, how long are they going to be willing to make an Ocean's 8 or a Wonder Woman or a female Ghostbusters if these movies don't perform? Because the Ghostbuster thing came with so much baggage. It wasn't just that it was the female cast. It's a new Ghostbusters movie, period. And then the added thing was it's all. So you had expectations that people came with for a new Ghostbusters movie completely aside from the fact that it was also a female-led. People just wanted a Ghostbusters movie. So that's where...
Right, but like in case of a movie like that, you really can't remake it unless you think that you can make a better film. And it's almost impossible to make a better film than the original Ghostbusters.
Right, yeah. And let's be honest, even when they made the sequel was terrible.
Yeah.
Even the Ghostbusters couldn't make a good couldn't make a good second.
Right, right.
But I'm just saying, as is floating out here, it's going to be very interesting just to see how this does critically as well. And once again, now you have to remember, this is just a statement of fact, and you certainly can attest to this. You know, women have certainly in the media, in terms of people who produce, shows, people who are editors and writers for newspapers and magazines, women have really risen within the media world in the last 15 or 20 years. And so those are the people that are writing the stories, who are deciding the stories. And so certainly from a media standpoint, the hype is there. And now it'll be a question of, is there some there? is there an audience for this? If you look at the media, you would think it's a no-brainer. But then, the numbers don't lie. But I do like what you're saying in that, it really shouldn't be the be-all and end-all because, as you said, and you're right, Charlie's Angels and things like that, there have been big, expensive movies that have been female-led, and they have done amazingly well.
Yeah, and I think it does come down to how good the film is, ultimately. Yeah. I mean, really, if you really look closely at some of the bombs, that they're really just not good films.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they just aren't. They don't hold up. But then Charlie's Angels, that actually was a good film. It's an action film. It's not going to win any Oscars.
Right, right.
But, but it's got a plot. It's got,
And it had its own. And what was good about it was that it had its own perspective. It was Charlie's Angels, but it wasn't hokey. It was cool and hip.
Right. And these women were powerful, and they were, kicking people's asses. And Drew Barrymore was also, though, still very charming, as Drew Barrymore always is.
Right.
And so, it just had all the elements, everything it needed for for success. So I think I think there is a little more to it. It is a little more complex. But I definitely think you're right. I think Hollywood is fickle. And, it's like when something works, they do it to death.
They do it over and over again.
And when something doesn't work, that's it. New formula. So
I just think there's a lot riding on this because this has been, once again, one of these movies where especially a lot of female groups or a lot of, very active, female activists have always been complaining, where's the Wonder Woman movie? Where's the Wonder Woman movie? Where's the female, power, broker there? Where's the female superhero? And so here she is. And, they've invested the money and they've invested the promotion. And so now we shall see. I cannot say goodbye to you this week without asking you, what did you think about Twin Peaks: The Return?
Right. I mean, it was pretty crazy.
I got done watching it and I said, "What the heck was that?" Now, I want to keep watching it.
But I'll tell you, you know, the funny thing is, I think it's, and I've read, and I agree with this, it's almost impossible to review because they threw so much stuff out there that obviously they have to, you know, begin to tie the ends to. But
Right. So the only kind of cohesive plot that kind of started to come together in the premiere was the plot about the high school principal who was arrested. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. There was a subplot.
So that takes place in, I don't even remember where they were. Were they like in Nevada?
They were in North or South Dakota. Bullhorn or Buckhorn?
Right.
Or
okay. Like yeah. But put it this way, they weren't in Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Okay?
Hardly the first episode was in Twin Peaks.
Right. So, which leads me to my point, which is like, if I had to think of some overarching feelings about it, like my first is that it felt a little bit disjointed, but I'm not going to let that, I mean, that's not going to, you know, change the game plan here. Obviously, you know, I'm going to keep watching. But also it was very hard to, connect from that perspective. You know, the Twin Peaks that we know, the actual town of Twin Peaks, the people who live there, who are going to be part of the series, they only showed up at the very end.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. First of all, I mean, you are very, you know David Lynch movies. When I watch the first hour, I'm like, okay, this is a David Lynch movie. This is not Twin Peaks. This is Lost Highway. This is Mulholland Drive. This is Inland Empire. This is a David Lynch movie. And the first 45 minutes, I mean, I don't even think there was any kind of real Twin Peaks connection. I mean, there were some images of this, you know, this machine and that's just looking out into the world there. And then there were these other characters. And here's my biggest thing. You know, it's so funny. You watch this and you say, what the hell is this? And it's very disjointed. And then you realize, but that's why you watch David Lynch.
Right.
You don't expect him.
We're going to get, and I'm sure we're going to get there, especially now that finally in the end, we've now found ourselves in Twin Peaks, in the Bang Bang
right.
bar.
Right.
And, you know, and there's Shelley sitting in the corner.
And there's James. Right, there's James.
And James comes in. Okay, so you know, we've only gotten a little taste of that. But my hope is that as, you know, as the story moves on, we're going to get more into Twin Peaks and where those characters are now. And I'm not saying it all has to be about that because, frankly, you know, I think if all this other stuff, a feeling of being a little disjointed, not quite sure what I'm seeing here, that all is part and parcel of a David Lynch.
Oh, definitely. So, but here's the thing.
You know,
here's the thing, though. As much as we've talked about and as much as been written about Twin Peaks and how it was so revolutionary and it changed everything and it was unlike anything on television, and all of that is true. But really, when you dissect Twin Peaks, it really is a very straightforward, conventional story and soap opera. It had a murder. It had twins, Maddie and Laura. It had teenage love affairs. It had diabolical plans. I mean, seemingly unorthodox as Twin Peaks was, when stripped down to its core, if you had a treatment or a paragraph, it was very conventional. And so here, that's the thing that I guess initially took me by surprise, is that Twin Peaks itself, in the way it looked and the way it told its story and the characters it told it through, were very revolutionary. But the story itself was very straightforward. It started with a murder. An unsolved murder. Like everything else does. This thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's about as basic when it comes to plot, you know, and every plot needs to have a conflict.
Yeah.
It's right there.
But this one was very, to me, this one was very David Lynchian, as in it was more about visuals and feelings and emotion and disruption. And as you said, disjointed, and you didn't know. You didn't even know the time setting. Was this the past? Is this the future? You know, you really, the only grounded thing, as you said correctly, was this murder that took place. But even who knows when that took place? And when is all this happening? And it was very difficult to follow. Here was, as I said, and when I was done, I said, well, that's exactly what you'd expect from David Lynch. Every time you expect David Lynch, it's been 25 years. There's all this hype. You expect him to deliver something, and of course, he does the exact opposite. The only thing that I would say at this point that disappointed me as not only a fan, but I would say as a filmmaker, I think it would have been the right thing to do. Even if you wanted to take off on all this other stuff that happened, this weird machine and this murder and this ghost and that appears, or this figment, whatever it is, this evil. You don't know if any of that stuff was connected to Twin Peaks yet. Mm-hmm. The first scene should have been, which was there later, it should have just been moved to the beginning just to give us a nice sense of, oh, it's back. The phone call from the log lady to Hawk.
Interesting.
If that was the first scene, he could have easily, after that scene, taken off on this stuff as well. But it would have been so nice to see the log lady call Hawk and say, I have a message from my log, and it says that you need to, something's missing with Agent Cooper. And we would see the log lady, we'd see Hawk, we'd hear Agent Cooper's name, and we'd go, okay, it's Twin Peaks. And then all of a sudden, the very next scene could have been that young guy looking at the box. But
I totally agree with you. And, you know, and in addition to that, I would say, because they start out, wasn't the very first scene in the Red Room or the Black Lodge, whatever you call it?
Yeah, for like a second.
Wasn't it Cooper? Yeah. But so I thought that was way too obvious a start.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. I think they should have started with Log Lady.
Yeah, that to
also,
me.
The scenes in the Red Room, you can do those anywhere, because those are very disorientating anyway,
yeah.
You know, because usually whatever's happening in the Red Room, you have no clue what it really means anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so, I think there was enough there at the end, as you said, but it took a while to get there. There was enough there to whet your appetite and to say, okay, there's the Red Room and there's Cooper. And obviously he's been, you know,
you're a doppelganger.
You know, the mean one is out in the world, and he's been locked in the lodge, and there was the one-armed man. I don't know what that tree was.
The tree. I read that the tree. Okay, this is going to blow your mind. The tree is the doppelganger or reincarnation of the guy with one arm of his arm.
Oh, that's it. Well, they said, here's the arm. They did say, here the arm. This is the arm. Yeah.
So,
though he was introduced as the arm.
Yeah. So that's what it is.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to go back and watch it 7 more times. And just,
well, let me tell you a little tip that I read. I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to try to check it out. I read that the next episode is already on Showtime Plus.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, they were streamed already. I heard.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to see if I can stream it before Sunday.
No, see, I don't want to do that.
I have Showtime.
I have Showtime, but I want to I'm old school. I'm watching them when they come
with
out.
Your cherry pie.
We did have cherry pie. Yes, we did.
Coffee.
We had an Atkins cherry pie. It was delicious. So, yeah, I'm glad. Well, at least we're on the same wavelength, and in a couple of weeks we can circle back and see if we like where it's going, but I couldn't have let you gone away today without asking you. So at least, okay, I know I'm not crazy. David Lynch may be crazy, but I'm not crazy.
And, no, you're not crazy.
Yeah, because I was sort of
not
like,
yet, anyway.
I mean, I was watching the first hour, and I said to my wife, I said, is this Twin Peaks? I mean, what are we watching here? I said, it's interesting, but it's not Twin Peaks.
Right.
They weren't even using the music. If you remember, the Angelo Badalamenti music wasn't even being played in the background. So I'm like,
it was the very beginning, but yeah, no, there was hardly any music at all. Actually,
yeah, I mean, it was just,
I remember from it.
To me, it was a David Lynch. At least the first hour was a conglomerate of a lot of David Lynch movies. And here's my little tidbit for you, because this was driving me crazy, and then I backed it up after the show. So you know the woman who the young woman who came in and gave the guy watching the box the two coffees?
The coffee. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know who she is?
I know she used to be on Californication. Are you asking me like
she was the little girl? She was the little girl on The Nanny.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that is funny.
I was like, who is that? I couldn't tell from when she took her. I couldn't tell from when she took her dress off, but her face, I'm like, that face looks familiar. Who is that face?
I knew that I recognized her, but I thought it was from Californication because I used to watch that. And
yeah.
She was in like a handful of episodes on that. But
she was the girl from The Nanny.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well,
Emily, once again, I'm glad you're feeling better. And I enjoy talking to you every week. And now I'm very happy because I got a free room in Austin.
That's right. Yes, you do.
I will come.
Industrial trash.
My industrial hefty bags with the, and it also has, it's I have those ones that are expandable. It's like,
right,
they,
yes,
they stretch. Do. Yeah. You need the elastic. It's like Thanksgiving pants. So anyway,
don't worry. I don't have a whole attic full of stuff. It's just some closets. So
I could do that standing on my head. We'll be done by lunchtime.
Right.
Well, we'll talk to you again. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. That's Emily Arminetti joining us here in the Pop Culture Club. Well, I'm Jim Toronto here at the Captain Podtastic podcast. Episode 54, every Monday, a new one is posted right here at WGNplus.com. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I am Elton Jim. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. Every week, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.